Our guest today on Personally Speaking is Robbie Benson, the amazing actor and writer and producer, a wonderful talent and a great human being. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, an actor, writer, director, and composer. Robbie Benson joins me now. At 18 years old, Robbie sold his first screenplay to Warner Brothers entitled One on One, which he also starred in. Other films Robbie has starred in include Ode to Billy Joe, Ice Castles, Jeremy, and Death Be Not Proud. He wrote and directed the feature film Modern Love, and he voiced Beast in Disney's Academy Award-nominated film Beauty and the Beast. Robbie Benson has executive produced and directed over 100 episodes of network shows, including 6 episodes of the sitcom Friends. He's been a professor of film production at several universities for 20 years. Robbie's been married to singer and actress Carla DeVito for over 40 years. In addition to acting and directing, Robbie's an activist in the field of heart research, having undergone 4 open heart surgeries since the age of 28. Robbie's here with us today to talk about his life, his career, his family, and the values that mean the most to him. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, Robbie Benson.
I love you forever, whatever forever means to you. I'll kiss you forever, however you want me to, and I'll be there forever. Together we'll make it through. Here comes the morning sun. Forever's just begun. Let it come. Oh, let it come.
Robbie Benson, thanks for coming on our program. It's delightful to have you in. You know, I'm big into family of origin. I am the son of Nick and Seal, God rest them. And I know that I am partially at least who they are. Frida Ann and Jerry, your parents, when you look back on how they raised you, what do you look back on and say, you know, they did that right? What did they do right?
They did a lot of things right. A lot of things. I had one of the greatest childhoods I could ever imagine. They taught me, you know, the obvious. They taught me respect, discipline, decency. Yeah. But they also gave me an incredible amount of independence, always keeping an eye on me, and always there was always, you know, like with any decent parent, there's always the, you know, making sure that the harness is and the bits in my mouth so I don't go too far.
Right.
But it's fascinating because when I was, gosh, when I was 12 years old, I was starring in my first Broadway show, and so I was going to the theater, and by the time I was 14, I was in another Broadway show, and I was leaving school, to, you know, to go to matinees by myself and coming home at night, you know, yeah, by myself in New York City. It was you know, only a few bad things happened, and I survived them. And by surviving these incredible failures, you could call it, it really helped me get through the world and start to build the foundation of who I am. And they did that for me. So that was extraordinary.
Robbie, I was recently, first time I'd ever done it, I was had my first stress test and echocardiogram and all that stuff. And just going for the tests, I was a nervous wreck. And then waiting for the results, I was a bit of a mess. At a much earlier age, you faced these incredibly wonderfully, powerfully frightening heart challenges. I got to ask you, how did you manage back then the fear factor and the unknown?
Yeah. I would have to say that maybe a lot of ignorance was involved because the only thing that I thought about, especially going into my first open heart surgery, the first of four major open heart surgeries.
Amazing.
What I was more concerned about was what the people who love me, my parents, my sister, my wife, that they always knew as much as I could show them that I was going to be great. I was going to be all right. I was going to get through it. They didn't have to worry and they didn't have to be nervous and they didn't have to be scared. And I would prove it. And the way that I would prove it is, you know, right before before they pulled me into the surgery room, I got up and I danced for them. And they went, "Oh no, you're supposed to be sleeping now." And I went, "Yeah, but I'm not." But, you know, and then when it happened to be my first one was on Halloween. So as they were taking me out and I heard my wife and my sister and my mom's voice, I had managed to open my eyes because I had visualized this moment. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to let it go. And I opened my eyes when I heard their voice and I went, "Trick or treat." And they knew I was okay.
Yeah.
So that's how I dealt with all of my surgeries, to make sure that the people I love are okay. The one in 2010 was a remarkable surgery. They did something to me at the Cleveland Clinic that no one could do, and they saved my life. And if you have anybody listening now who has heart issues, I would strongly advise, in my opinion, that they should go to the Cleveland Clinic because we only have one heart. And believe it or not, there were hospitals, famous hospitals on the West Coast that made terrible mistakes with me. There was one operation, my second one, where I could not breathe for 6 years. And my cardiologist would pat me on the head and say, "Oh, that's just inside your brain. You've had two open heart surgeries. What do you expect?" And it's like, "Well, I expect that I should be able to breathe." Basically, if anyone has any issues with their heart, I would strongly advise that they go to the Cleveland Clinic. And I'm not being paid or no one knows.
Right.
I have a friend who's a director, a DP, a director of photography, and he's a dear friend, really talented young man. And he went in for a stent in LA. And I won't say which hospital because it really doesn't matter. And they not only botched the operation, they almost killed him. And he was on the operating table for like 8 or 9 hours. And they had to eventually open him up just to, because went in under his arm, but they had to open him up like me all four times with me. And then when it was over, he found out that they had damaged his heart badly. So I worked with him and the guys at the Cleveland Clinic, got him there. He had open heart surgery. They fixed his heart. And 3 days later, he walked out of that hospital.
Oh, that's great.
He's doing great. So again, that's me waving the flag. If anyone wants really great help, go to the Cleveland Clinic.
You know, Robbie Benson, aside from being a multi-talented guy with the acting, producing, writing, singing, all that stuff, he also has written a book about some of these experiences. And Robbie, what struck me was that whole grappling with post-operative depression. Now, I like the notion that depression is not a moral failing. It's just an illness like anything else. But could you give us an insight into when depressed, whether by physical illness or life, what's the root, at least for you, out of depression?
Out to dig myself out?
Yeah.
I go to three of the most important things in my life that helped me get out of it. One, the first thing, the most important thing is love. I do, as if your car is a brain and I'm doing an inspection on the car and trying to figure out how it's running and this and that. And I go, actually, the only thing that really matters in this brain for me is how much I love my wife and how much I love my children, how much I love my mom and dad, how much I love my sister. Oh my gosh. And so that's the first thing. And that settles me. That takes the idling. And you can still be like, 2,000 leagues under the sea, but
right.
But at least now you know where the floor of the ocean is. Okay. Mm. Not breaking through to catch air. The next thing I do is something that is creative. I either sit down and start writing. And right now I'm writing a play with music, and I've been working on it for quite a while. And I don't know if you can see behind me is my studio, my little tiny studio in this room. And I make music, and I try to get my wife involved, which is wonderful. And now my son is going to work with me. I've gotten him. He wants to get back on the guitar and play. And so it's like that kind of joy is, for me, it sits so deep in my soul. And that joy helps me. It doesn't cure me. But boy, does it help me. And, exercise, it's the best medicine for me. I'll either go for a run or get on the Peloton bike. I love doing the Peloton because they have all kinds of different things. You can work out hard, but you can also learn mobility. You can stretch, you can do weights, you can do things. And there's also no shame in saying, oh, beginner. Because now I'm 67 years old. I've always been a jock, but like when I do the weights, I don't want to, hurt myself. So I just hit beginner.
Yeah.
And Carla works out with me now, and it's fantastic. It's like it's almost like we're training for the rest of our lives because we want to be able to pick things up. We don't want to fall down. And I know that probably sounds weird to most people, but
not at all.
Us. I mean, you get it. It's like we have to keep moving and have to keep being mobile and try our best.
Yeah. And related to what you just touched on, Carla, every weekend in my church, I get to celebrate weddings. And I'm amazed by anybody getting married, Robbie, because when you think about it, you know the past, you know your romantic relationship, but you have no idea what the future holds. And to say, I'm going to love this person always and forever, no matter what, when you have no idea what that means, it's just to me such a leap of faith. For decades, you have loved Carla and she has loved you. If you were in my church and I said, write me an essay on why you're going to marry this girl, what back then did you see in Carla? What has she turned out to be?
That's such a magnificent question. Thank you. God, I have goosebumps. Carla, for me, the second I met her, I was in another world. She just took me somewhere else. It was as if I was standing next to, and I could not believe this, the most gifted and talented person I had ever met. And that was literally in seconds because we were rehearsing for Pirates.
Okay.
And so I could tell, I mean, I've been working all my life with famous, famous people. And I'm standing next to this person and two things happen. Very remarkable things. One, the most obvious, as a actor, writer, director, I went, wow, is she talented? Matter of fact, she's so talented. I don't like the word artist for singers. If you sing, you're not an artist, you're a singer.
Right.
I've only met two or three true artists in my entire life. Mm. My sister, with her designs and the way that she made drawings and paintings, and then took that and became a very famous fashion designer. And her name was Shelley Siegel. And she had a line called Laundry. And that's just what people know. But I grew up with her. I saw what she did and the mosaics she would make at 12 years old, hitting shells and making these gorgeous paintings. So that's something I felt like I was suddenly around a true artist. And that was like, wow. So all of this respect went in her direction. And suddenly the respect came back in my direction. The other thing that happened, which is something that is very unusual in show business, there was no showbiz ego inside of her anywhere. As a matter of fact, my first few performances, I didn't get enough time to rehearse, so I wasn't sure if my blocking was right. And she would just gently maneuver me and smile at me. And we'd get to the right place. And then we started working on bits that were funny, because funny is so important to me. And it's important to her. And we made each other laugh, not on stage, but we made each other laugh at the things that we could do. And 8 shows a week, we would try to make those bits better. And we try to sing better and try to be in better harmony together on stage. And I was suddenly in the same space with someone extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks to the day after I met her, I told the conductor of Pirates, who eventually became the best man at our wedding, that I wanted to marry her. That was only 2 weeks. It took her a year to say yes, but but a lot of begging.
Apparently it worked, though, some 40 years later. And I believe we're playing, in fact, a song during this interview that you wrote for her, and about the love you guys share. Now,
which song? Because
this is Forever.
Oh, yes, Forever. Yeah. I wrote that for her.
We have a video for that, so we're going to put that on because it's great stuff. And of course, it says what you feel for her. But you know
there's a wedding song that we did that's called You Are Home to Me. And it's not a very good video or anything, but it's a lovely wedding song. Okay. We also did another wedding song called Treasure Your Forevers Together.
Robbie, I could be wrong, but I think you've got a crush on this girl, huh?
I still do.
Now, for those who don't know, Robbie Benson and Carla aren't just this happy, lovely, wonderful couple, but they have done something very daring. They brought 2 wonderful children into the world. What went into the decision, Robbie, to become parents? And I'm thinking of Victoria Clark, the wonderful Broadway actress. She has a son. And I said, do you worry when he walks out the door? And she said, he never leaves me without me worrying. That to have a child is to know that it's a challenging world out there, and you love them so much, you want good things to happen for them. How did you guys decide to have these children? I got to ask you, how in the world do you find these very creative names for your children?
Well, first, I'd have to say again that ignorance probably played a great part in my decisions, because to me, it was like, oh, we got to do this. I grew up this way, they'll grow up that, and it'll be incredible. Right. And from that moment on, we just went through what everyone goes through. I mean, if you love your children, you go through life, you know? And the energy is flowing. It's never sustained at one level. It's an organism. The love that you give to them, the fear that you have for them, the worry. And in today's world, you know, today's world's not like when we had, you know, in the 80s and then the 90s, when we were having children, wasn't like it is today.
Yeah.
You know? Children of today have a lot to deal with.
Are you a social media guy? I worry about that with kids, that they're so overwhelmed by caring what everybody in the world seems to think and wanting approval and friends and all that stuff.
I've been teaching film production for 30 years. My career kind of ended around 2012, you know, right around when I needed my last open heart. And I thought, you know, I don't think I can, at the time, I thought I wasn't sure if I could be there for my students, because film production is, it's not like analyzing film. It's not analytics on any, it's a craft, and there's too many skills, and you need to teach that, especially when it comes to safety. But it also artistically, you need to teach that, how someone can have something in their minds. And then, so I used to worry about my students the same way I worry about my children, I realized. But one of the things that I would say to them, please don't bring your phones to class. And then when we would get deeper, I would say, if it were up to me, I'd throw the phone in the river.
Yeah.
Of course,
yeah.
That's pollution. That's wrong.
Right, right.
So I wouldn't throw the phone in the river, but that is, if you understand that, you know,
yeah,
what accelerates that kind of feeling, there is so much. I just can't tell you. I mean, if you tried to get in touch with me, you never could. The only time I ever have my own phone on is when my wife and I are not together, and we're always together.
And I'll call this the Derek Jeter question, since I asked him too. By anybody's standards, Robbie, you have so many talents at so many levels. You know, not just the acting, which most people know, but the writing and the singing and everything else you do, the producing and the teaching. So you're this multi-talented guy. I don't know where you are in terms of believing in a higher power, but I often wonder, and I asked Jeter, why, when every American kid wants to be a successful baseball player and popular and rich and beloved, why did God give you all this? And he said, I don't know, but I'm not going to ask him. I don't want him to change his mind. And in the same way, you've been so gifted in so many ways. Why do you think you were given those gifts? And do you think, as you look back on your life, I have taken the gifts that I have and I have used them for good?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, too. I try to teach my children when things, I mean, first of all, you know, people look at someone else who's successful and you go, oh, you're so successful. And what they don't see is the fact that, no, I'm not brilliant. I'm just resilient. That's a lyric in one of my songs. And I think that I was given opportunities.
Hmm.
I don't really know how much talent I have. I will tell you that I have a lot of skills.
Okay.
And I keep trying to fine-tune skills. And I love dreaming and going to other places and putting that down either in music, lyrics, or as a book or a screenplay, whatever.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think I was born with a ton of talent. I was born with joy, and I find joy in the things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been extremely lucky, as lucky and as fortunate as anyone could ever imagine. I mean, I should be dead with my heart. But, you know, I think Derek Jeter is right in the sense that, you know, I don't want anyone to stop me from doing what I love to do.
Yeah.
Any power.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of God, there are a lot of people in Hollywood that think they're God. And they make decisions that actually completely destroy your career. And what you do is, you take the bad, you harness it, and you make it and turn it into good. And so, you know, I mean, that's very much how I got Beauty and the Beast when I was the voice of the Beast. You know, no one, when they thought of me, they didn't think that I could be the Beast.
Right.
And I went, wow, you don't know me at all. I mean, it's just that you're looking at my the work I've done in the past, but you don't know me, the Beast. Wow, I'm typecast. I mean, that's the closest, the frustration, the desire to learn and to understand and to change what makes me angry and to understand what love means. That's me. That was in the Beast. And also, we make people laugh.
Yeah.
That's in the Beast. I mean, it's you know, so whatever it is, I'll be doing it to the day I fall down and stop breathing. Yeah.
I want to thank Robbie Benson for being with us. Robbie, I've been one of those fans for so many decades, and it's awfully nice when you get to talk to someone like we're doing today to find out that the perception of this as a good, normal, down-to-earth guy who hasn't forgotten where he comes from, that everything is a gift, that he's been blessed, and that all those things you mentioned, not just the talents and skills, but blessed in love, both from your parents and from your beautiful wife and your kids. But you know that, and you share it so openly, and you're grateful. And it's a wonderful, delightful thing. Robbie, thanks so much for being with us, and many more years of health and happiness, please. All right?
Okay, and thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate it.
As we end today's program, I thank you for being with us. If you need to reach me, you can get me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to not just listen to this program, you can also see it on YouTube by going to Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti. If you do, please hit like and subscribe. We're also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lusanti, and now we're on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.